program in our History Mystery series is King Arthur. It's written by Mike Walker.
Listen. If you can, discover what there is underneath you. The earth contains many secrets of life hundreds of years ago. Who were the old heroes? People like King Arthur, who were they? Were they real? Or just a story? How far back do you think we have to go to find out about Arthur? How far down into the earth to help us discover clues? We can travel back through the years, 100, 200, 500, 700. Well, where should we begin to try and discover more about Arthur and the time in which he lived? That's if he ever lived at all.
The fire spread from sea to sea, and did not cease until, destroying the neighboring towns and lands, it reached the other side of the island and dipped its red and savage tongue in the Western Ocean.
Where are we? When are we? In a time soon after the Romans left Britain. They had been here for nearly 500 years, and then they went. The Roman army pulled out. The Picts flooded across the borders from Scotland, and the British had got soft after all those years of easy living under the Romans.
Then, all the men of power were so blind that as a protection to their country, they sealed its doom by inviting amongst them, like wolves into the sheepfold, the fierce and unholy Saxons, a race hateful to both God and man, to drive back the invasions. Nothing was ever so harmful to our country. Nothing was ever so unlucky. They first landed on the eastern side of the island, and there fixed their claws, supposedly to fight for the island, but really to fight against it. The barbarians, being thus introduced as soldiers, obtained an allowance that for some time satisfied them. Then they complained that they did not receive enough, and they chose any reason to quarrel, saying that unless more generosity was shown to them, they would break the treaty and plunder the whole island. All the buildings were leveled to the ground. All the men scattered, together with their bishops, priests, and people, whilst the sword gleamed and flames crackled around them on every side. In the middle of the street lay collapsed towers, stones of high walls, holy altars, parts of human bodies covered with dried blood, looking as if they had been crushed together in a press.
They were called the Dark Ages, those times. There were no books, few laws, only the strong survived. What we know because a monk named Gildas told us about it. But how did he tell us? How can we know what happened all those years ago? In this manuscript, Gildas the monk wrote about a time many years before his own. And he wrote about what the Britons did in the end about the Saxons.
Some of the Britons, being captured, were murdered in great numbers. Others, starved by food shortages, gave themselves up to become slaves. Some others passed beyond the seas with loud groans. But others would in no way surrender, but kept attacking from the mountains, caves, passes, and thick forests. And then, for the first time, trusting not in men, but in God, they slaughtered the foes who for so many years had been plundering their country.
Gildas says the man who led the Britons in their fight back against the Saxons was called Ambrosius.
He was modest, strong, and faithful, and though brave afoot, was braver still on horseback. The Britons fled to him like swarms of bees who fear a coming storm. and they fought the war with Ambrosius as their leader.
For a start, Ambrosius fought and defeated the British king who had been fool enough to invite the Saxons in the first place. Then he turned on the invaders and fought them in many battles, and one of the last of the great battles he fought, or so Gildas tells us, was the Battle of Mount Badon,
which was almost the last slaughter of the enemy.
But Gildas doesn't mention any Arthur, so why do we bother with him? Maybe because the Battle of Badon is also written about in the only other bit of writing that has lasted from the 6th century. It's a church calendar which told people when Easter should be celebrated each year and mentioned important events which had happened in the past. And it mentions the Battle of Mount Badon. And it says it was
the battle in which Arthur carried the cross of our Lord Jesus Christ on his shield for 3 days, and the Britons were the winners.
And that is the first time anywhere that Arthur is mentioned. And why would the Chronicle bother to mention him if he wasn't a real man? Real or not, it was 200 years before anyone else wrote about him.
I have heaped together all that I found from the annals of the Romans, the writing of the Holy Fathers, and the traditions of our own old men.
These are the words of another monk called Nennius. He lived in Wales, and when he writes about Arthur, he says,
Arthur fought with the king of the Britons. He himself was the leader in the battles, and there were 12 battles, and the last of them was on Mount Badon, where Arthur was the Britons' leader, and 960 of the enemy fell, and no one overthrew them except Arthur himself alone. In all battles he stood forth as the winner.
Maybe Nennius was writing about something he knew had happened. Or maybe he'd been reading Gildas too and just copied out the story, because people have always loved stories. And soon after Nennius, more and more stories came out, and for the first time Arthur is called a king and given a fine hall where there is feasting and adventures. Then the stories got confused, bits of this and bits of that, until in the year 1135, a book came out that started to pull all the different bits together. It was written by another monk, Geoffrey of Monmouth, and called The History of the Kings of Great Britain. Only it wasn't the kind of history you do in schools. It was more legends and myths, and maybe a few facts too, all mixed up together.
Then Arthur assembled all the youths that were of his opinion, and putting on a coat of mail worthy of a king so noble, did put upon his head a helmet of gold, graven with the semblance of a dragon.
Geoffrey was the first to bring Merlin the Magician into the stories, and to mention Arthur's sword. It was called Caliburn, not Excalibur. This was written a little while after William the Conqueror invaded Britain in 1066, and in this story, King Arthur goes off and fights the Normans, and beats them, too, by defeating their champion Flollo in single combat.
Taking their stand opposite each other and levelling their lances, they forthwith set spur to their steeds. Arthur was more skillful with his lance and unseated his opponent. Then, unsheathing his sword, was hastening to smite home, when Flollo ran upon him with spear levelled, and with deadly thrust brought both horse and rider to the ground. Then Arthur gave the final strike, and Flollo fell. And beating the ground with his heels, gave up his ghost to the winds.
Was the man that Geoffrey was writing about the same man who was the battle leader against the Saxons at Mount Badon? Hardly. Saxons, Normans, kings, generals, it's all different. But there are some things that are the same. When Gildas the monk was writing his story, he was living in a time when he thought that everything in the country was going wrong. Nobody cared about building things, only about destroying them. Nobody cared about doing good, but only about grabbing everything they could for themselves.
My complaint is the destruction of everything good, and the growth of everything evil.
So he wrote a story about a time when men and women in Britain worked together to throw out the evil of the Saxons. And Geoffrey was writing when the Normans had invaded. The Normans, who looked down on the inhabitants of Britain and thought they were no good as soldiers. And Geoffrey wrote about a British king who could defeat any Norman who stood against him. Maybe All these storytellers had a use for Arthur. Maybe when they were feeling bad, he made them feel good. Just like Rambo makes the Americans think they didn't really lose the war in Vietnam. So everyone had a use for Arthur. They used him to show what was wrong with the country or wrong with people, and each time someone new told a story, an extra little bit was added. A man called Wace, who was born in the Channel Islands in the 1100s, invented the idea of a round table, so no one could sit at the top, and no one had to sit at the bottom.
King Arthur made the round table that later became so famous. He made it so that when his knights sat together, all their places should be equal, and none could think himself better than his comrade.
And there's another idea that Wace has in his story for the first time.
Arthur is dead in Avalon. But the Britons say that when he is badly needed, he will return and live again. And men have never known if he really is dead or alive.
But he was there, waiting for the time he was needed. Waiting for someone who needed a hero and wanted to say something about the way people lived.
I yield, Sir Knight. Give quarter.
Now, what do you do if you're telling the story? Two choices.
Give quarter! Never!
Or mercy.
Well, our quarrel is not so bad, we can't stop fighting.
In the year 1460, there was a prison called Newgate, just by Stinking Lane in the City of London. And in that prison was a man by the name of Tom Malory. He called himself Sir Thomas Malory, but he ended up inside a prison all the same. He was committed for stealing, and had a reputation for being a very violent man. There wasn't much he could do stuck in prison. All he had to pass the time were a few books to read, and some of them were books about King Arthur. And Tom Malory began to think about Arthur and what he could use him for. So he wrote a book.
I pray you all, gentlemen and gentlewomen, that read this book of Arthur and his knights from the beginning to the ending. Pray for me while I'm alive, that God send me good deliverance. And when I am dead, I pray you all, pray for my soul.
Malory brought together many different ideas from many different stories and joined them together. Like taking the magician Merlin from one place and the story of the lady in the lake from another.
So they rode till they came to a lake which was calm and wide. And Arthur saw an arm clothed in white silk that held a sword by the hand. Lo, said Merlin, there is the sword. So they went into a boat, and when they came to the sword that the hand held, then King Arthur took it up and bore it with him, and the arm and the hand went under the water. And so he came unto the land and rode forth.
And because he thought the times he was living in were full of evil and corruption, just like the monk Gildas had done all those years ago, he made his King Arthur a man who struggled to be good. Young Arthur, who pulled a sword from a stone and became king, and formed a company of knights and married Queen Guinevere.
Yea, said King Arthur, I love Guinevere, and this damsel is the most fair that I know living, or yet I could ever find. So Merlin went to Guinevere's father, King Lodigan, and told him that Arthur wished to marry his daughter. This to me, said King Lodigan, is the best tidings that I ever heard, and I shall send him a gift that shall please him. I shall give him the Table Round. When King Arthur heard of the coming of Queen Guinevere and the 100 knights with the round table, then he made great joy. But Merlin warned the king that Guinevere was not wholesome for him to take for his wife, for he warned him that Lancelot would love her, and she him.
Everything changes. Lancelot, Arthur's best knight and his best friend, falls in love with Guinevere. They can't help it. Nobody wants to hurt the others, but it all goes wrong. Even Arthur's son Mordred turns against him in the end.
Mordred was ruler of all England, and he faked letters saying that his father, King Arthur, had been killed in battle with Sir Lancelot. But Arthur was not dead, and left off the siege of Lancelot's castle, and came home with his army to be avenged upon Mordred. But the people of England were happy under Mordred, and many of them followed him. When Mordred saw King Arthur, he ran at him, sword in hand, and Arthur shoved his spear under Mordred's shield. The spear went through Mordred's body.
Traitor, now your death day has come.
And when Mordred felt his death wound, he pushed himself along the shaft of the spear. And Mordred thrust himself to the butt of Arthur's spear, and he lifted his sword in both hands and smashed it down on Arthur's head, crushing the helmet, the blade biting deep into Arthur's brains.
And the story goes on, and on into our own time.
Camelot! Camelot! I know it sounds a bit bizarre, but in Camelot, that's how conditions are. The rain may never fall till after sundown. By 8 the morning fog must disappear. In short, there's simply not a more congenial spot for happily ever aftering than here in Camelot.
And I suppose the autumn leaves fall into neat little pyres.
Oh, no, my lady. They blow away completely. At night, of course.
Of course.
Hello there. My name is Merlin. I'm a magician, and I'm very pleased to meet you. Being a wizard is quite wonderful. The only reason I'm here talking to you today in this 20th century is because I can move around in time as you move around the block. Yes. Now, I'm going to tell you a story about a young lad who lived in England about 1,500 years ago. Now, his name was Arthur.
But we'll never know if there ever was a real Arthur, a real warrior who started all the stories, or if people in every age just need a hero. And if people do need a hero, then what kind of hero is he? And does the kind of hero people choose tell us something about what kind of people they are? You throw a stone into the water. The ripples spread out, getting wider and wider, long after the stone has vanished. But don't forget the original splash.
Here lies Arthur, the once and future king.
King Arthur was written by Mike Walker and produced by Elizabeth Cleaver. Those taking part were Crawford Logan, Tudor Barnes, John Badley, Simon Cuff and John Church. Tomorrow at 12:30 we'll be looking at the Gunpowder Plot, to be followed by The Mary Celeste. And that's all from BBC Education for tonight.